Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Janet Jackson is back on tour, but don't post it on Instagram. Burger King is not tempting us with the Black Halloween Whopper. Oprah sits down with Ellen, and we receive some legit life coaching from James Lott Jr. now. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting across from James Harrison Lott Jr. James, welcome to Grant's Rants.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, Grant Rutter. I'm happy to be here.
Well, everyone that's listening is in for a good episode. A very dynamic guest. I mean, let's just read off a little bit of what James keeps so busy with doing. Well, James is a professional organizer. He's a certified life coach, radio host, author, producer, blogger, and a father.
Yes, and grandfather.
Oh, there you go. The list
That's
continues.
Very important because it continues. I'm a grandfather too. My grandkids want to know that they're important.
Right. So, God, I mean, there's just so much information that we can learn from you. And I really wanted to have you on because, you know, we know each other through AfterBuzz.
Yes.
We always like to say how we meet and all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I learned really quickly that you have had quite a life.
Yes, I have. Several lives.
Yes.
I'm on number six, I think, right now.
Wow.
Number six.
And, you know, also, we'll touch upon it later in the episode, but you even had a time period where you reinvented your life.
I did.
So that is really something that I want to get into because that's kind of what the show is. You know, it's about the lives that we live wherever that may be. But, of course, we're talking on Hollywood Talk.
Oh, yes.
And you're a native Californian.
Yes, I am. Los Angelian. Left, came back to Hollywood, and changed my life.
There you go.
That's something right there.
Okay, right there.
Yes.
And you're the first person that I've been interviewing on this show that's a native Californian.
Oh, yeah. It's not very common. I am first generation. Both my parents aren't from California. Neither my grandparents have the grandparents from California. I'm, and my brothers and sisters, we're the first ones of my family from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Born here and raised here.
Right.
So it's not common. And L.A. went with me everywhere I went. When I lived in Sacramento, when I lived in San Francisco, when I went to New York. I mean, everywhere I went, L.A. was in me.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
But I was open to the universe, of course, too. But just my upbringing here, just kind of the energy here and how things are done here, it stayed with me and kind of took me on my journey.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about some hot topics.
Yes, yes.
One of the hottest topics right now is Janet Jackson and her concert. Now, you mentioned earlier, before the show, that you listened to the album.
Yes, I actually finished the album about 2-3 days ago. And the album was admirable because it's Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. She's back with them. Smart move, girl. Yep. Smart move. And the album, actually, for someone who's around my age, and it was coming back today with all the Rihannas and Demi Lovato's and stuff, she actually came back and put together a really good pop album. The music is really good. So it showed me, like, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis are still got it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite song right now is called Should Have Known Better. So if you don't want to hear the album, just want to hear the song. Its song is so good. I get to hear it in the clubs. It's going to be a really good club banger. But her vocals are just like she was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I sampled the album because I couldn't purchase it at the moment.
He lives in Hollywood, kids. He's trying to make a living.
Yes.
Yes.
But, I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. I was wondering what direction she was going to go.
Same here.
Because, you know, No Sleep, which I really like, but I'm like, that's not something that I really necessarily hear in the club, at least the album version.
Yes.
You know, so I was like, I want to see where we're going to go with this, and I was not disappointed.
No, the thing about Janet is, I always say, so here's my rant.
Yes.
Here's my rant. Her last albums were horrible because they were mostly just these sappy, no personality ballads and R&B tunes with one great dance song.
That's it. Yeah, that's what I thought this was going to be.
Me too. And I'm like, Janet, you excel when you do dance music and you actually do your slow songs actually mean something. So I was like, come on, girl. You can do it. You can just show these other girls how it's done. Mm-hmm. So this album, I was like, this is a good start.
Yeah, you know, I feel like she just came out of, like, seclusion.
But where's Janet? Where's Janet? That's the whole big thing about that.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, she's coming out in this album. If you look on iTunes, I believe it's almost like 17, 18
tracks. I know a lot of music. And she hasn't anything out since 2008 or 2009. And that was Discipline, that album, which went number one, but it was just the last thing she got out. Yeah. It wasn't really, didn't do much.
Now, what do you think her motivation for coming back and doing another album is? She doesn't need the money.
Oh, she sure don't. For those of you who don't know, she's married to somebody from one of those Middle Eastern countries who's a billionaire.
Yeah, he owns Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, so he doesn't really need the money at all. And, you know, but no, I think she loves performing. I think she really does love it. I don't know about recording so much, but I know she loves being in concert on stage. I've seen her live. I saw her Rhythm Nation tour back in 1990. And she gives her 1,000%. And from what I've seen so far in new concerts, she gives 1,000%. Right. So I think more of it was like, I need something to support my touring habit, maybe. And maybe, so she went that direction. Like, gotta put out new music, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Jacksons like being in the spotlight.
That's true. Let's talk about that.
Yes, the Jacksons, the family themselves.
The family themselves. I mean, first of all, this could be the whole rest of the podcast.
Yeah, I know.
There's too many to talk about. I can't keep track of them all. But they certainly remain relevant, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
But yeah, no, let's talk. So really, yes, though, they're out there. How are you feeling about this new show on Lifetime?
Okay, so there's Jackson's Next Generation, which originally I heard it was supposed to be the other generation of kids, like Rebe's kids, whose last names are Brown. Austin Brown is one. He's heavily on Twitter. That's going to be that. But it decided to be 3T, who were popular in their own back in the 90s, and their brood, and featuring Prince and Blanket and a few of the others. I was like, oh, okay, because they're fascinating to us. They're our first family in many ways of music. They're like our royalty. I mean, they came out the year I was born. Jackson 5 have been in my life my whole life.
Right.
And some alliteration of a Jackson has been in my life.
Well, you know, I thought about them in general. I mean, it's amazing to think that family's been such a constant through all the changes in their own lives.
Yes.
And then in entertainment within music. I mean, to go from black and white television.
Yes. Yeah.
And now, you know, Janet, she's able to keep up with the best of them,
yes,
the youngest and the best of them.
Completely.
And, you know, she looks fantastic.
She's gross. She's great.
Yeah, you'd never know.
Now, if you have a trainer and stuff 10 hours a day, you would look like that too. I would look like that also.
I say the same thing about people in L.A. I'm like, well, wait a minute. There's no job. Your parents pay for Equinox. Right. You have a trainer 3 times a week. And you look great.
Yes.
Well, who couldn't do it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
who
I'd be there
couldn't?
Too. Me too, so she better look good. But no, like, I met LaToya. Speaking of
Jackson. She's my favorite one.
Oh, I know, I too. But you know what's funny? Here's my little quick rant. I think she's actually the sanest one.
I think so. That's why I loved her on Celebrity
Apprentice. Oh, yeah. That's right. She was really good on Celebrity Apprentice. I was like, this chick actually has some brains.
She's my favorite one.
She had her own show, Life of LaToya, which I did watch.
Yeah.
It was kind of cutesy. But I actually met her at Millions of Milkshakes. She did a milkshake there, which is here in West Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I actually got to talk to her a little afterwards. And she was so nice. And like, she sounded like a regular person. They have that high voice, of course.
They do.
But she sounded like a regular, but we had to talk about business.
Really?
Yeah,
what do you talk to LaToya about? Yeah,
we talked for like 10 minutes, and she was like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to diversify my business because my brand has been so mired in like scandalous stuff in the past and fluffy stuff. I'm trying to move it into other things. She goes, I want to do movies, I want to do TV, I want to do music. And I was like, really? She goes, yeah. She goes, I know I'm getting older. I was like, yeah. I said, me too, girl. We're all getting older. But I said, you can still do it. She goes, yeah. She goes, I really want to diversify and be seen a little more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear her say that, I was like, I was rooting for her. I'm rooting for you, girl.
That's great.
So
see, I like that she's looking towards the future and trying to figure out what she can do with her brand at this point. And she's forward thinking. And I question Janet with that.
Yes.
Because of what she did with the videos. Not necessarily her legal team, you know, whatever. But, I mean, you know, it's been all over the place that people have attended her concerts.
Yes.
For Instagramming videos and pictures.
Yes.
And the next day they wake up and they'd be... they disappear. Or they received... One girl received, like, an agreement she had to, like, you know, give a digital signature to just to access her profile.
Yes.
And then all the stuff was gone. So, you know, they say it's a copyright infringement issue.
Yeah.
And then Janet put out this statement, and it's questionable to me. But here's what she said.
Say it.
I love and appreciate my fans. She put this on Twitter.
Yes.
She continues to say, I enjoy watching the short video clips. Please keep posting them. Then she goes on to say, mm-hmm. My team is passionate about protecting the intellectual property we are creating. Permitting the use of long clips does present a contractual problem. Then she says, I have asked my team to change their approach and allow you to engage socially with those videos. Mm-hmm. I mean, on Instagram, you can only post a 15-second interview.
That's it.
So how much shorter do you want it? Do you want like a frame?
Or Vine. Was it nine seconds?
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. I think the Jacksons have an issue with privacy anyway, which I totally understand. The way they grew up, I completely understand where they're kind of screwed up about what that means, maybe. And so, and artists are temperamental anyway.
Well, look at Prince. Prince couldn't handle it.
Oh, Prince. I love me some Prince, but he makes me angry sometimes too. But I love Prince.
A genius. Yeah.
But the Jacksons are so talented, but they also have this kind of privacy thing that's constant in their lives. So I think this is where it converged somehow on Instagram. So I think she's kind of possibly backpedaling a little bit, just going, oh, no, we're going to work it out for you. And we're you know, maybe she got a little too much backlash over it. And she already knows from the Super Bowl that you don't want a backlash.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah, let's say that.
That moment in secret.
Where's Justin
history?
Timberlake? Where'd he go?
Really, though.
Yeah, nothing happened with him. But yeah, so it's kind of funny. I think she knows at this point. Don't mess up my scene right now. I'm back. My shows are sold out. Number one album. We don't want to mess up anything.
Right. I mean, I just think that's just the truth. That's just what it is. I mean, without the power of social media, that opens up a whole new group of ticket buyers for her. Not only that, they're excited to see her. She's been gone for a minute. She should be celebrating the fact that people are filling the house.
I agree. I completely agree. I think she's fortunate because people like her, Madonna, people who are getting up there in age, they really have to be careful. You, Mariah Carey, all of them, they have to really be careful of how they treat their fans today. Because people get turned off nowadays. Yeah. And see you later.
Is it really intellectual property, though?
I don't think it is. I think it's just a word they're using to play it off.
Right.
I don't think it really...
No,
you're not selling it.
It's a performance. I mean, they purchased tickets. No one's ripping you off.
Right, you're showing something that she's doing, but you're not selling it. You're not packaging it up and putting it on a DVD, selling it on the bus.
I
mean, seriously, you're doing it on her page, you're tagging her in it. Like it's, I think it's just a word they're using. Because we work in TV and stuff. We know that sometimes you're going to play things for 15 seconds or 30 seconds. Anyway, but I think this is something that she's just trying to play off. They're trying to play off.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, we can talk about Jacksons forever.
I know.
And there's one more thing I want to bring up.
Yes.
A controversial tweet that has people talking. Prince Jackson basically he answered a question. Someone asked him, you know, are you really Michael's son? And, you know. In his own way, he replied, and he replied with a quote.
Yes.
Said, the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. Unquote. I was raised by my dad with my brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
The key thing there is with. I think that's a term that like I want to point out, you know, because it's like he was raised with them, alongside them, as opposed to like a one family unit. You know, I wouldn't necessarily use that terminology to talk about my sister.
Okay.
I think it's a very interesting quote, and I think for many people it confirms, I think, what a lot of people have been trying to get to the bottom of for so long. I mean, at this point, it's like, do we really still believe it? I mean, who cares?
Yeah, okay, there you go. Here's the part. My brother and I had a discussion last night, and I have a sister who I raised. I didn't have her, but the father was not around, and so I raised her, co-raised her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm basically like her father. So I kind of get what they're saying. It's like she's not mine from my loins, but who's to say that she's not mine? So for them, I get to this point, they believe that Michael was their father. Whether biologically or not, almost at this point, you're right, he's grown up. Paris is almost a grown up. Blink, they were raised by him. They are Jacksons. When you see that show that they're on right now, he is just as Jackson as the rest of them. He may not look like them, but he is just as Jackson as the rest of them. And I'm like, and all his cousins are like, you're a family. Like, they totally took him in. So it's almost like being adopted or something. I feel at this point, he's a Jackson. Michael was his father.
I mean, I've always been fascinated by the whole situation. That Martin Bouchier interview.
Yes.
I
train wreck.
And
yes,
that put everything on. Like that, I wasn't as into that whole conspiracy.
Okay. Yes,
and just the whole Neverland Ranch. Like I just. My mother was always like kind of checking it out, and then because of that interview, now I'm in too deep, and I looked them up. I look up the status of that ranch every couple of years.
Yeah,
something happens. Someone goes in there and they do a YouTube video. There's a lot of like urban explorers that go in there. If you're really interested, go on YouTube and check it out because it's almost like everything's still kind of intact.
I think it is.
It's just been a while.
Yeah.
But there's still like him, like a life size statue of him holding kids' hands in the park. It's still around.
Yeah, no, it's
still around. a real interesting caper, I guess.
But
I'm fascinated by it. I want them to do like, and I know they'll never do it, but I want them to do like where are they now? But like, what's happening with this whole thing? Like, but let's go back to the ranch. Let's get some of the mother come back on.
You know, it's so weird that they didn't do like Graceland. Like, I went to Graceland, and, Priscilla Presley did a great job, speaking of tying in, I was all into Lisa Marie and Michael Jackson marriage, so that was fascinating, like, why did they get married?
Oh, yeah.
I was totally fascinated by
MTV.
That. Oh, I was totally fascinated by that.
Yeah.
But just tied, they didn't turn Neverland Ranch into, like, Graceland. Somehow it didn't work out that way. That's fascinating to me. Why didn't they do that? And I have a feeling it's that family, because they're so kind of screwy, they couldn't pull it together.
Well, they want the money from the estate. They're not going to make a museum out of it.
But look how Graceland, he was broke when Elvis was broke when he died.
Right.
And it's now a multi-million dollar. I went there.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I don't think they think long-term like that. I mean, it's just, that's business.
I'm ranting again. So you got me ranting. I'm on your show, and I'm actually ranting.
But, I mean, you're right. The people, they're thinking of the quick money. They're not thinking of anything like that. But, I mean, did he even lose that property? Wasn't that property lost?
I think that... Those lawyers own it, or it's like something was, it was something really weird that I was not really here. He was in debt. He was totally in debt.
Well, there's so much I want to ask about the Jacksons. I just don't know what else to say at this point, other than let's talk about something really ridiculous.
Oh, I love ridiculous stuff.
Okay. I saw this article, and it's about Halloween themed. And I mean, have you seen this Halloween themed Whopper at Burger King? First of all, let me give you some credit. Burger King, let me give you some credit.
Okay.
You know, the antics they pulled off with the color of their buns has me talking about them not once but twice on this show.
Oh, how funny. Okay.
I referred to them in episode 3, I believe. And it's like, here we go again. So they're getting press. When do you ever, when have you been to a Burger King?
I haven't been in years.
Me neither. I remember is like that really, really homely tile that's supposed to look like wood in all the Burger Kings.
Yes, yes.
Like the wood paneling. And so, I mean, I haven't been bothered. Never. Now, of course, there's a bunch of videos of people trying out this.
My friend tried it out.
Burger, and then people are saying that, when they make a deposit in the toilet, it's different colors. Now, is this something, are you in the Halloween spirit, James?
It reminds me, when I was a kid, I told my mother I wanted green eggs and ham for real. I want green eggs and ham for real. So she made with food coloring and stuff. I ate green ham. Disgusting.
Yeah.
And when I thought about it, I was like, this is really disgusting looking. So when I saw this bun, I was like, this time black is not beautiful. Thank you, everybody. Good night. It's such a weird, I was like, it's such a weird thing. So at first I was like, it's kind of a cool idea, maybe. And again, brought press to Burger King. Like Burger King, I've been there a long time. Because Carl's Jr. is making all the noise.
Right.
And I saw it and said, oh, okay. But it didn't look appetizing. When they explained how they make it, and it was like, I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah. I mean, they're saying that it's the A1 sauce.
Which I love A1 sauce.
They're saying that's what makes the bun black, but I don't know.
I don't know either.
I doubt that. I mean, why would they've been using food coloring for years? Why stop now?
Exactly. Because I said A1 sauce. I'm like, I love A1 sauce, especially when I don't eat burgers anymore. When I eat burgers, I like A1 sauce on my burgers more than ketchup. But I thought, in a bun, though, it didn't sound appetizing to me at all. So when I saw it, I was okay, no thanks for me.
Let's talk about a rebranding of a certain network that we both have a similar, we both rolled our eyes. I don't know anyone that's about this. ABC Family, been around for as long as I can remember.
Yeah. Good
long
programming.
Time. Yeah, good programming. Probably more relevant than ever.
They're more relevant than ABC. like its parent company, yes.
I mean, they've got great young demos of people watching those shows.
Yes, they do.
The Diary of the Slutty American Teenager was on for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, all type of shows.
Pretty Little Liars. Yeah. My show, Younger. I love Younger. That's my show.
I watched that other show. What was that? Was it Alexander
Kevin Network.
Alexander Trendo, the double show.
Oh, yeah. I'm blinking out.
Chuck Pratt wrote the show.
Yes, I'm blinking. Oh my god, that's dope. I know what you're talking about. But yes.
Yes.
Good programming and
Sutton, her is the character's name.
Yes.
If you know, you know. Oh, if you don't, who cares? But but really, I mean I think it's like maybe it's not doing that well and they have to rebrand. But I mean, look, I mean they're even coming up with unscripted programming for this network, so it's really valuable to them. So now it's going from ABC Family to this awful name.
I know. God.
What is it called?
Freeform. Okay.
Oh, is that like an engineering network?
I thought it was like some art thing or some interpretive dance number. I'm like, Freeform. I'm like,
construction site? Like, I'm trying to think of
right. You know, like, what, when you were sitting around at a table and you were thinking of, let's just throw some names out there, Freeform came to mind. And people said, yeah, that's it. That's it, Freeform. I feel like they explain it as they want the demographic to be like, from first kiss to first kid.
The Becomers.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh,
I don't know about that. I don't know about that name either. My eyes are rolling, people. You can't see it, but just hear our eyes are rolling. We're ranting. But they say they want to, that's their demographic. So the programming, actually, I don't mind that kind of mission because it fits ABC Family programming. But the word Freeform doesn't fit that mission to me. I don't understand where that fits in.
I think that's a good example of when you're sitting around a table too long and you're trying to come up with an idea.
We're supposed to be Hollywood.
And it's like, yeah, and it's like, oh, that's it. That's the idea. And then, like, you know, in everyone's mind, it's been, like, ingrained because they sat for hours coming up with this. But for someone who's not involved, and like us, and like everyone, this is not just
same,
the two
same,
of us.
No, same here. Same here.
Everyone I've spoken to about this has questioned the title of this network.
Yes, they have.
What the origin is, we don't understand. It's just too, it's too much. It's like, it's too unnecessary. I don't understand. I get this whole idea of rebranding,
I get that.
Fresh energy, mm-hmm. doing something mm-hmm. new. You know, I never watched the TV Guide Network, but once it became pop, I was a lot more interested in their programming and what they did. It was because it was like, okay, it shows to me that these big conglomerates are investing.
Yes.
But, I mean, if the demographic is that are these Becomers, I can't imagine. That's not very social media friendly.
No, it isn't.
It's not really something that's on everyone's lips. Where pop is very easy. Pop, it's like, you know, that someone, it's an older man thinking this is what younger people are going to be attracted to. But Freeform is kind of like, I mean, I can look, I'm even screwing it up. I can't even remember it. James, I have it written down in front of me, and I can't even remember the name.
What's crazy is, as you're talking about branding, I always feel like it reminds me of my own business, the Super Organizer, because when you hear the Super Organizer, it gives you an idea of what I do. He's an organizer, but also gives you, it's a unique enough name that you think, oh, there's something going on also there with the organizing. It's a name that's catchy.
Right.
It's catchy. You need things that are catchy. Ovation was a channel that's kind of catchy.
Right.
Bravo, actually.
Just thinking Bravo.
Yeah, Bravo is a great name, and it's catchy. Mm-hmm. It's like these things actually tell you a little bit about what's going on the network or what they're doing. Freeform, I'm thinking art, dance, I'm thinking nothing.
That could even be a fitness channel.
Yeah.
That could even be something for this. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Again, in Hollywood, people think, they try something that's young and hip, they think, and it doesn't always work.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't always work, so I guess we'll see.
Let's talk about Ellen.
Yes.
Ellen, talk about someone who really rebranded, and really made a name for themselves.
Yes.
In Hollywood, another person, bigger than ever.
Yes.
You know, huge. Now she's going to be on Oprah's Masterclass.
Which I love that show.
And yes, Oprah, of course, has so much to pull from. And Ellen and her have had a good relationship over the years. I was watching a lot of vintage clips.
Okay, yeah.
And Oprah's always been in her corner.
Yes.
I'm a big supporter of her. I have a lot of respect for that. I love Oprah personally.
Yes.
all of her. I think she's great.
Yes.
So basically Ellen's kind of reliving this whole coming out of the closet at, you know, an older age and how it affected her career. And you know, what's interesting, looking at the Ellen DeGeneres show itself, when that show started, you know, Ellen's personal life, including Portia, was nowhere near that set. Like, it wasn't discussed, it just didn't happen. And now she's been on quite a bit, of course, promoting Scandal. She's got stuff to promote. I mean, Portia de Rossi does a lot of stuff, but they even had a newlywed game.
Yeah.
and they were on there together. And I was like, wow, good for Ellen. She doesn't have to, like, you know, put that buffer zone anymore, because my God, how we have changed. Now, all of this happened in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a blink ago.
It's funny because Ellen is my generation. I'm close to 50. She's close to 60, I guess, or somewhere up there. And I remember back in the day in the 90s when Roseanne had to fight for a kiss with Meryl Hemingway on ABC. That was a big deal. ABC was like, no, you can't do it. And Roseanne was the biggest show in the country. And just a quick kiss was a problem. 30-something fought to have show two men in bed. They weren't doing anything, but they were in bed together. That was a big deal. Like having them. So I remember the days when any kind of gay anything was a big deal and maybe shut down.
Yeah.
So as a person at the time, I'm gay, of course, and as a person at the time, that was a big deal for me because we get so close, and then it was like, oh, we get so close, yeah. So when she came out of the closet on Ellen's show, it was so monumental in so many ways for me watching it. And because her personality is so likable, it was good that she was the one to push the break the window.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you need somebody who's non-threatening, who's likable, who can kind of work with everybody to kind of break and be the breakthrough. You can bring the butch lesbians later. But you know, at first it was kind of like we needed somebody like Ellen who was just very well liked to come through. If you had told me that she would have a successful talk show in its like 11th season, and it's so middle America normal, I was like, no, you'd be wrong. I would have said you're wrong. I would completely it wasn't even in my realm of possibility.
It's fascinating to see how far we've come. Just in television. I mean, I can't even imagine there being a scene where two people couldn't be in bed together. I mean,
right.
Because it's just like now it's everywhere. Look at anything on ABC, specifically on Thursday nights.
Yes, I know.
On Thursday nights, there's a hell of a lot going on.
Yes, there is. TGIT, yes, I watch it. But for me, it was to see her go on Masterclass, because I love that show, and I'm a life coach, and I love that these shows feel like life coaching sessions. And I think she has a lot to offer because she went through the fire and came out the other side even better than she was before.
After
she came out of the closet, in my opinion, her talk show, her regular show tanked. It was horrible. I thought it was not funny anymore. But now she's in her natural element doing this talk show. And she's so likable. I think there's nothing wrong with being likable. And I think, and being a lesbian, and being a likable lesbian, why not?
Yeah. I think it makes a lot of middle American housewives feel like they're liberal.
Yes.
By just watching her, they feel like they're progressive because they're watching a real live lesbian on television.
Yes.
And it really makes no difference. Her jokes are, her brand of humor is universal. Yes. It doesn't make a difference. I think it's good. And I'm happy with her. I go back and forth with Oprah. I love Lisa Oprah. I go back and forth with Ellen because I hear that working on that show isn't the most amazing experience. I hear that she's pretty, you know, strict.
Yes.
And perhaps, you know, it's working there is, you know, a little bit of a difficult environment.
Sure.
But, you know, as a person and, you know, as a personality, what she's done for people.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
it outweighs.
You know,
it outweighs. Yeah. I mean, people, a lot of you out there don't know, if you don't work in Hollywood, because me and Grant, we work in Hollywood in various ways. And sometimes it is difficult. Sometimes people are difficult. Sometimes people are strict.
Yeah.
Putting a show together, as we both know, is not easy on any scale, small or large. And so I'm sure there are things that probably happen that just, you know, are natural things that happen in behind the scenes. But like you said, the finished product outweighs all of that. And her influence on product. I mean, Oprah does it, but she has it too.
Yep. She's a cover girl. She's out there doing all everything.
I mean, it's amazing. She's somebody that I kind of hope to be myself at some point because I'm very open about who I am, but I don't. It's not my whole identity. That's my first thing, is to just entertain.
Right.
But back in the day, I remember when it was important for us to say we're gay. I'm a gay artist, I'm a gay singer, I'm a gay talk show host, I'm a gay actress. It's like, it's very important. Now we're at the point where it's hopefully we don't need to keep doing that so much.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, I it's just like, that's just a facet. I mean, nobody has to explain, like, when you, that's always the thing that I always said, like, growing up with different people. It's like when you say, well, who are you?
Right.
But most, you know, gay Americans will say, well, I'm a gay blank.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, well, no one else leaves with I'm a straight blank. You know, because I'm a, you know, I'm a homosexual. I mean, I'm like a heterosexual cook. No one's going to say that. No one's ever going to answer a question that way.
It's very true.
How can you relate to Ellen and her coming out story? And, you know, she was a specific age.
Yes.
She made that announcement.
That's why I agree with that, because I know what it's like to be in a position where you're kind of in the closet. I've been in the closet at jobs back then. Because back then, you could be discriminated against. You could be fired. You could be harassed and have no real legal recourse. And so I know what that feels like. And so when I finally, around the time she came out, I kind of came out to a job also. It was really funny. It was like just around the same couple of years. And and I became a manager of that place. I'm not going to name the place right now because I don't want to get them, whatever. But it's the place I worked at. And it really did. They were like, wow, James does a good job. Like, it was almost like Ellen. I could relate to her. It was like, but he's good. Just happens now we know he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, now we, okay. And so I was able to be freer. I think I did a better job. Because now I wasn't hiding stuff.
Right.
Or censoring myself all the time.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I imagine so.
And for her too, I'm sure for her too, the same way, I'm sure. Taking roles, that was one movie, Mr. Wrong, that Ellen did. Okay. It's like, I'm sure it was hard and tough. And then now she can do whatever she wants.
It's just fascinating. You mentioned how, you know, you didn't have any legal recourse. Now, it's like,
my God. Litigious everywhere. Right? Litigious,
yeah, right? I mean, you can't even say certain things.
Right.
I mean, if you even feel a certain way, you could get somebody fired by the way they've worked with you.
Oh, I know.
I mean,
there were jobs where I had people, I had a load of harassment, and also being black, too, was the same thing. Just like, well, I had jobs where I was the only person of color in the whole company.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one, not even Latino, Asian. I was the only person. And literally, I had to prove myself harder just to compete with the regular folks that were there, whether they were straight or white or whatever. I had to make sure that I was told from an early age, James, you're going to have to work extra hard to be considered normal.
Mm-hmm.
You tell somebody that's really rough.
It is. It says the whole...
The
course for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
You always feel like you've got to work
extra hard.
And you have something to prove.
Exactly.
And, you know, living here, everyone has something to prove. So, you know, it's like to have that and then on top of it, having to even, you know, prove your own identity.
Yes.
I mean, it's just too much work.
Yes.
I mean, no wonder why so many people just crumble into the pressure.
And say, never mind, or just say, screw it, or whatever. Yeah. And I just, for me, I've always been trying to live the best life I can. It's always been a goal of mine. And as I got older, because you just live life longer and you learn to survive things, you just do, you care less. That's a great thing about getting older. You care less. And you start to live, you start to look out and live the way you feel like you want to live now. And I feel like Ellen Jones is the same way. She's like, I'm living the way I want to live now.
Yeah.
And I know I am. I know I'm living exactly the way I want to live now. All of it.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
James, you've given us a lot of information already. I feel like we've kind of peppered part two with part one, but what a better way to gain perspective and to really connect with these topics. You know, you have had a lot of different careers. You sent me a list, actually.
Yes.
And this is stuff that I didn't know. I knew that, you know, like we mentioned, you had a lot of different changes over your life, and you've really pursued a lot. But the career, I mean, the resume. I mean, you know, let's talk about you. So you are a registered nurse.
I was, yes.
Okay. A waiter, video store worker, retail store worker, store manager, merchandiser, secretary, event planner, farm and agricultural education coordinator,
yes,
switchboard operator, IT director, actor, and I know you mentioned you worked in human resources.
Yes, HR. I hired and fired people, yes.
Wow. So how long have you had all these? I mean, you know, have you switched careers a lot, or have you just, you know, have you just worked quite a bit in life?
Okay, so I started working 31 years ago. in 1984, and my first job was a day camp counselor. And I started doing
I missed that one.
My sister got me a job, and I was 15 years old, and I had to get permission from my mom to get a job because I wanted to work for myself and get money for myself. And from that job to today, I've been working like that. They're like 31, 32 years. So some of the jobs were concurrent. When you live in San Francisco, I lived in San Francisco for 16 years. It's a very expensive city. Mm-hmm. Very expensive city. And there were times I had two or three jobs at one time. So I'd be merchandising a window 3 days a week. Then I'd be waiting tables 4 nights a week. And then I'd be doing the IT specialist stuff, you know, twice a week.
Okay.
I mean, there's times where a couple of those would overlap. And those jobs would last 5 years each. I mean, they would last for a while. But the other ones, they were definitely... I was doing food service and video store stuff while I was going to nursing school.
Okay.
Then you
see, you're a great example of a hustler.
Yeah, I am.
And that's what this show is about. I mean, it's true. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And there's so much stuff that you have to constantly be working on. So that's why you have so much going on presently. Mm-hmm. You don't know any different.
I don't. It's funny you say that. People always say to me, how do you multitask? I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, I've been doing it my whole life. I think I'm I just can do it.
Yeah, or we'd be lost without having so many responsibilities. I would be. I mean, it's like, just to be able to, like, flex that muscle and keep things moving and to have something to really offer. Like, that's always been my thing. I need to do more than just a job.
There you go. Yes.
I need to have something to
stimulation,
offer the world.
Stimulation.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to. So I totally relate, and that's why, you know, you're a fantastic subject to have in the hot seat.
Yes, right? I know it. But the thing is, for me, I really like doing different things at once because then I'm never bored.
Mm-hmm.
That when I wake up every morning, my day is different than the day before. That's actually magical when you think about it.
Because
a lot of people, it's the same... Okay, Michael Cuss. Same stuff, different day.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
I've had jobs where I literally, my stomach hurt because I had to go into the same job, look at that same computer with that same stack of papers that I had to go through every day. And there was nothing different. Every day was the same thing. I did a job for 6 years that was just same crap.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every day, I have maybe a video shoot in the morning, organizing a client in the afternoon. Then the next day, I have... 2 TV shows to do, and then a radio. Like, it's like it's totally everything is a life coaching client, and it's very different every day. But I'm actually getting paid to do it, or I'm having fun doing this, or I mean, it's like it's my life now.
Right. And has it taken a long time to be able to get that system flowing like correctly, like the balance?
Yes.
Because, you know, sometimes it can be too much.
Ooh, yes.
And then sometimes it can be too little.
Yes.
Sometimes it's like you look around and you're kind of like, wait a minute, last week I did 7 things. Today I have 3 things on Monday. What am I going to do for the rest of the week?
Yes, it's true. Feast or famine. I changed my life 7 years ago at age 40. I had made a decision that I was not happy when I literally, talking about stomach hurting every day, my stomach was hurting. I always say, trust your gut.
Mm-hmm. I'm learning that.
I know. I'm deadly serious.
Yeah.
My gut was screaming at me, literally. And I had like, and I was like, this really hurts. And I couldn't, anything I would take, it didn't help it. And so I said, I should look at what's going on in my life. And it was my job at the time. I wasn't working my passion. I was doing something for somebody else who didn't appreciate it. We've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been in those jobs. And I was like, I'm in a city I'm tired of. I need to do something. And literally, my bosses paved the way. Won't say their names, and they're not in the business anymore anyway. But they told me in a meeting that they could treat me however they wanted to because I'm lucky to have a job in this economy.
Hmm.
This was back in 2008.
Okay.
7 or 8. And I was like, no, I don't.
No.
And I'm telling you something. I'm saying this number not to brag, but this is to give you an idea of my grandma used to always say, not all money is good money. I was making about $100,000 a year. That included benefits and everything. And I hated my job. Living in a city that I was there for 16 years. I had great roommates, but I was done. My kids were grown. I was done. I packed up and changed everything. I mean, it was a ballsy move back in 2008. You know, it was like, it was not, you know, the economy was not doing well. But I looked at it as, my health, my well-being, my mental health comes first. I will figure out the monetary part.
I can totally relate to this. And in every single way, you do what you're going to do before you go under, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, God willing, things will fall into place, but you have to have that faith and you have to take that leap. I can't imagine not.
Yeah.
I can't imagine not, because what is the purpose? You know, you have to fight for the privilege of living.
I see. Okay. I like that. I love that statement, because to me, someone asked me, well, I deserve it. Like, no, you don't deserve anything.
No.
We're fortunate to be here. So what I try to do is try to make the most of my time here, because I'm here for a reason. Obviously, I'm alive still. It could end tomorrow, but right now I'm alive. I'm going to work it out. And so changing my life and changing my location, changing my job situation, changing my brain matter, that was all very important. And I didn't care what was going to happen. I had to do it.
Right. That's when you know, when it's like in every fiber of your being, that's when you know you're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. It may not look like it on paper.
Not at first.
a third party might think you're crazy, but you know, I had a similar experience moving out here.
And oh, yeah.
I go through similar experiences even now, where you question, you know, where things are, where you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, for me, it always kind of starts off with like a little idea, and then it gets so big that I can't ignore it anymore. And then I have to address it.
That's me too. The thing, you know, here's the thing, folks, about Hollywood and about LA in general. It's set up for you to actually not make it. That's my opinion. It's set up in a way, because here you can have 8 million meetings, things in development for 100 years, and just people just not on your side, and weather and traffic, and it's set up out here so that you don't really make it. So the ones that are like us who are in the business and we're still doing it, to me, we've made it.
We've survived, where so many people have had to walk away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
It is.
It shouldn't be that way, but it's survival of the fittest in many ways.
It is. And people always tell me, they're always surprised by me because how nice I am, because I, like even with you, Grant, I believe in supporting my friends in their ventures. You don't get that a lot. I mean, I will retweet my friend's stuff. I will share things on Facebook. And you know this. I do it all the time. I'll give shout outs. I believe that there's room for all of us. We're being set up to fight against each other, and because there's supposed to be one slot, and that's it. That's not true. There are two or three or five slots. You can make a slot.
Right.
Why are we all fighting for that one? We should all be trying to just bring it together and make room so that we all work it out.
I agree.
That's my philosophy.
I love it. You mentioned, and I want to cover that, you know, you have children.
Yes.
Now, I want to know how does this all work into all these jobs, living in different cities? You know,
yes.
I'm just curious. When did you find time for this? And really, truthfully, though, how did it all happen?
Well, Grant, you know, when a man and woman get together. What really happened for me, I've always wanted a family. That was something that, since I was a child, I come from a huge family, and I wanted a family. And so I always kind of knew I was going to have one. And we start young in my family. I come from young parents and so on and so forth.
Gotcha.
And yes. And so my children came to me young, and you just do it. I was never married or anything like that, but you just like co-raised. So you just do it. When you're in it, especially when I was younger, I couldn't do it now because I'm too old. But when I was younger, the energy was there. It was just like, okay, I'm working these two jobs, but then I have Monica's soccer meet on Saturday. And then Tammy has a thing going on Tuesday. And like, I just, I don't call it sacrifice. I didn't sacrifice. I just made room. Because I always tell people in my organizing practice, turn off the TV for 30 minutes. You can organize for 30 minutes. I don't have time. I'm busy. No, you can organize, but you're watching TV.
Yeah.
Do you go take a dump? Yeah, you go to the bathroom? Tell me how long it takes you to take a dump. Take that time and then go, and I can pick up a thing in the kitchen and put it in the right block.
I always
believe that in my life period with the kids, I made time. I didn't have the greatest father. So for me, it was very important for me to be the father I didn't have. And my girls tell me I succeeded. They told me that recently. It was kind of a very touching moment, actually.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What more can you ask for?
Right. My one daughter, her birthday is on November 3rd. And I was just with my other girl 2 days ago in Sacramento, and she'll be her late 20s in January. And but they told me that I basically was somebody they can count on. And that's the basic. Kids just want to know that they're thought of and that they're important.
Mm-hmm. Value,
that's
yeah.
all they want to know. Everything mm-hmm. else is kind of secondary. You know, they want gifts and stuff and all that kind of crap. But it's all they want to know. And so for me, it was it wasn't seamless, but it was a part of my life to have these kids. And my friends who weren't having kids yet were laughing. Or my friends who were gay and weren't having kids at all were just like, well, James is gone this weekend. Can't party this week because I'm going to Sacramento to see, you know, homegirls track meet. And so for the they kind of got used to it. They became mascots to me and my friends kind of because they were always around. And like kids. So then when I became a grandfather, which I wasn't happy about at first, when I became a grandfather, it was great because they're extensions of me, I have a family tree.
Yeah, exactly. After me.
I'm Papa Jamie.
You did. Yeah, you created yourself.
And
yeah.
The kid, they're the lights of my life, Zayden, Rylan, and Scarlett. Zayden I named, so he's my firstborn. But it's just been beautiful to watch them and watch my kid parent.
Right.
To see what they learned from their parents. Like, what did they learn and what they didn't learn? And then I'm watching my other girl. She's in a serious relationship and wants to have kids. And I'm going to be curious to see how she parents. So it's like, it's not my kid, but they are my kids. I feel ownership.
Right.
But they're not. But I'm there. I mean, I seriously, my busy life, I set aside. It's not always easy. And I have missed things. You're not perfect. You do the best you can. Right. But you're just in it. So for me, I make time for them.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the life coaching side.
Yes, my favorite
thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And I want to know, you know, basically, and this is a good question for people that work in the business too, or anyone that works long hours, teachers, nurses, whomever. When, you know, what do you recommend when it comes to having to really try to fit things in when you work very long days and the last thing you feel like doing is hanging up shirts or getting things done? How do you manage to just, you know, to get the bathroom clean and go to the bank and get gas? This is something that I really struggle with, because when I'm checked out of a long day of work, the thought process of even having to go and pump gas and go in and have to swipe the car kills me.
Yes.
What do you recommend for people, like, just to be able to manage their time and maximize their day when they're tapped out?
Yes, I am a big believer of time management, proper time management, and I think that's key. Trust me when I say this to you, when you have an organized life, you have a better life, you actually work smarter, not harder. It's actually so true. And one of the things that I always look at is I look at the schedule. I'm a big person of writing things down. I see you are too. I have pads. I write things down. And so I get a calendar. I look at that calendar. And I suggest to people, look at the calendar. Just pick a week. Find a day that you can really sit down and try to map things out. Not a day when you worked 12 hours.
Right, right.
Because then you don't want to do anything. So I'm a realist. I'm like, screw that noise. Okay, you have a day you only work 6 hours? Okay, then schedule in a couple of hours to get yourself organized. To really sit and think about systems that will work for you.
And another thing you say in your Super Organizer radio show that my mother has told me for years is that everything has a place.
Yes.
And like that comes down to just straight up organizing and not having clutter around you. Because like you said, if you get your life together and, you know, if your house is together, your life is together. So they say.
Yes.
So everything has a place. I love that.
Yes. I believe in everything has a place. Everything has a space. And I always believe, again, pick time when you're not super tired and not super busy, because unless you work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, then obviously you're screwed. But I'm sure there's some time on a Saturday morning or a Tuesday evening where you can sit down, and then I always say start small. Start with a drawer. Start with a piece of the closet. Start with a tabletop.
Yeah.
And work your way there. Start scheduling it in, and start just organizing it. Yeah. And once you start placing it where it needs to be, you just trust me. When you look for something, they say it's about 17 minutes you're looking for something on average. It cuts it down. You know where the scissors are. You know where the keys are. When you get home from work, have a spot where the keys and the wallet go.
Right.
I do. And throw it there, and that's where it always is.
And you always know. See, my problem is with what you were saying, start with the tabletop, start with, you know, a section of the closet. I can't stop. Like, once I get going, it's like, well, if I just dust that, then that's completely done. Well, if I start with the coats, then, you know, I should probably move on to, like, the shoes. And then before I know it, like, you know, it's like, you know, 2 a.m. and I'm organizing the closet on a Friday night. And I mean, I love it. That's how I was brought up, and I can't undo it. Like, yeah. I just love doing it. Yeah. It's just is what it is. But on the now yeah. to transition to the organizing mm-hmm. side of life for you, mm-hmm. and the advice that you have with that, what are some common mistakes you see in your practices that most people just trip up on?
What kills me is spacing. I'll go and I go, James, I can't fit all my clothes in this chest of drawers. You look at the top two. People normally go to where either eye level or near eye level. So the top two drawers of a 4-drawer dresser will be packed to the gills. The bottom two will have a sock in it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's your space.
In the kitchen, in a pantry, the eye line, that's where all the cans are and everything's right there. And then down there is nothing. Or way up there, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what do you use the least? That should go higher up. You're right. Everything eye level should be what you're using. But also, you can put some stuff down there, too.
Right.
But like a lot of times, it's just kind of like their vision is just like right here. And it's like right in front of them. Mm-hmm. So they don't notice on the sides or on top or on bottom. So it's uneven. That's one of the major things I see. They're like, oh, I can't fit these shoes in here. Let me look at your racks. Yeah. Oh, they have 10 shoes up front. Pairs of shoes up front. But then there's one back here. There's plenty of room back here.
Do you think it's laziness or people just don't have that mindset to be able to, you know, really maximize their space?
I think it's
both.
They just
don't have the knowledge.
I think it's both. I seriously think I've done this now 6 years. I think some of it is laziness. We do come from lazy folk. I'm sorry about it. It must be all politically correct. No, we have a bunch of lazy people.
It's true.
Who just don't really have the energy to do it and don't have the desire to. So just like, I'll get to it later, but complain about it all the time. But then we have some people who, the other side of that is there are people who just don't have an idea of how to really work it out. Mm-hmm. I worked in retail, which feeds my job because I know how to fold shirts a certain way. I know how to fold them 4 or 5 different ways depending on how you want to maximize
there
the different spaces.
Yeah.
I can do jeans a certain way. I know how to put shoes a certain way. I mean, I have some of that experience. Yeah. If you didn't work retail, you may not have that knowledge. So part of my past jobs, I can do that. Being a nurse comes to this job. I know how to have good bedside manner and how to talk to people. I come in with no judgment. I'm non-judgmental. I come in to help you out and work with you to make your space the most usable. Mm-hmm. It's not about me.
Right,
Who gives whatever about me?
Yeah.
I mean, my place is organized.
I bet.
I'm here for you to make it the best space you can possibly have. So the mistakes I usually are spacing.
See, I was trained at a young age, and having to move out here in LA and living in bedrooms in small places, yes. I've learned that I have that system where, you know, the holiday decorations are not readily available. They're in the back, but they're there for a reason. But
yes.
My laundry and, you know, the Tide is up front because that's what I'm going to be using weekly.
Exactly.
You know, but I've had to really maximize some tiny spaces. Like,
I understand.
Like, I don't even have a drawer for utensils. I have a space and a cabinet, and I've had to really, you know, clear the deck and make sure that you know that's all that I have. It's tough, especially when you live with other people. Someday I'll have my own drawer of my utensils, and that will be an accomplishment.
We will talk about it on my show. Have you ever talked about your drawer of utensils? No, it's funny because I lived in studio apartments, efficiencies, they only called, where I really didn't have a kitchen.
Anyone can do that.
I did it. I was in my 20s, and I did it for a couple of years, and it actually was kind of fun. When you're in your 20s, well, for me, when I was 20, everything was fun. But I had to learn how to maximize space, too. Because there's one of those things where you get too much stuff in there, you can't even live in there. Like, you literally can't live in there. You can't move around. So I did learn it. But organizing, it's a passion of mine. I went to life coach school at age 45. And I hadn't been to school in years. And it was a 9-month program. And it was intensive. It was once a week. And this giant book, and when they started us with coaching from center, is what they call it. knowing who you are first before you even help anybody else. And that transformed my life. Mm-hmm. And I took this course. I passed. I got letters after my name. And I love it. It's just it all works together for me. In Hollywood, it works for me. In mm-hmm. dealing with other co-hosts. It helps me deal with scheduling.
Yeah.
I book my own guests like you do. I have such a calm, organized way about stuff now. I really work smarter than harder. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does work in every part of my
life. That's the difference.
And in Hollywood, you got to stay on top of everything.
Right.
Because one wrong booking, and the publicist is pissed, and the guest, double booking.
Yeah.
I almost did the other day on my other show. I had to take care of that. But you have to really be organized on top of things because, especially in this town, people are so, I got 10 projects going on and 5 projects, and I got 10 clients, and they're half remembering what they told you.
Yeah.
And you got to remember what they told you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. You mentioned your other projects. Let's talk a little bit about the other stuff you do, specifically with soaps. Now, that's something that we kind of bonded over.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
You know, of course, we met during AfterBuzz. We met during the after show for Big Brother.
Yes.
But
yes.
We discovered we have a mutual admiration for these long-standing soaps. We know all the players,
yes.
The same players in the game.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
It's, you know, I think it's a very special space.
And it is.
It's a way that's very underappreciated.
I completely agree.
I got, of course, into watching the soaps through just watching Guiding Light with my mother and then eventually establishing my own soap, which was Passions. And that was the one that I watched. And then it was once that kind of was like on its way out, I could tell. That was when I was like in high school reading ratings and trying to figure out what it all meant. And then
and then
Bold and the Beautiful was my show.
Oh, okay. Bold and Beautiful. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So
let's
then
go
it
on.
Turned into that. And, you know, I got to move out here. I got to intern on these shows. And Bold and the Beautiful was my first experience. And that was just everything to me.
Because that was
something I had watched and I was able to, you know, interact and I got to see how the sausage was made. It was amazing. It was amazing. But that, so I've always had a love for soaps and I'm a huge advocate for the industry like you. So, you know, how did they come into your life?
Okay,
and
so.
Why are they so impressionable?
Soaps were the backbone of my parents and grandparents. For me, my mother watched the ABC shows. So it was all my children. She used to watch Young and the Restless too, but it was like all my children, One Life to Live. And she didn't watch General Hospital, but I got to General Hospital back when Luke and Laura.
So that was your soap. That
my
was your
first
mind.
Soap was Luke and Laura, late 70s, early 80s. And we'd get off of school, go to my friend's house across the street. I remember watching The Wedding live. 81, which is the anniversary is coming up in next month. And so I remember watching it. That was my first introduction. Then I had an older sister who liked the CBS soaps. So she was Another World, Guiding Light. And there was one more. So I kind of watched some of those. And later, I got into them later. In the 90s is when I got into Guiding Light and As the World Turns. And then I got into Santa Barbara. That was my major one. Santa Barbara came out in the 80s. And I was like, oh my God. And that's when I was like, what's this other show? And the show that really took off for me was Days of Our Lives.
That was 90s days?
No, I got it in 83.
Oh, okay.
83. I'm talking before then.
Okay,
1983, there was a character named Hope, Kristen Alfonso, who came onto the show as a young, fresh-faced girl from the other side of the tracks. And she was a Horton. And I thought she was so beautiful. To this day, my Twitter handle is Black Hope LA. My Instagram is L Black Hope. It's all because of her.
That's where the hope comes from.
That's where it comes from.
Hope.
I'm dead
Brady.
Serious. I was at her fan club. I was a huge fan. So Days of Our Lives.
It's amazing. People pull so much from soaps because my friend back home, him and his grandmother had 2 dogs.
Okay.
And they named them Belle and Bo.
Days. Oh, my God.
So
yes.
It's funny how, and you know, I'm not necessarily named after Grant Alexander on Guiding Light, but it was an inspiration.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, soaps are the fabric of so many people.
Yes.
Lives and existence
yes.
and inspire people. So I love that's
yes.
what that origin.
Everybody's like, my first AOL name was Black Hope. I mean, like everything was because of Hope, because of her. It made an influence on my life. And so then I started doing, I did Another World for a while. I did some of those, and I did Search for Tomorrow and Edge of Night. I did a few of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I became a huge, huge, huge just soap aficionado. I was getting Soap Opera Digest, Soap Opera Weekly, like you watching the ratings. It became a big thing for me. Later on, I got into Young and the Restless a little bit, and Bold and the Beautiful first came out. I graduated high school the year Bold and the Beautiful started, 87. And I was like, what, new soap? I tried Passion, Sunset Beach for a while when that was on. I tried Generations when I was on. That was the first interracial soap opera.
Yeah, yeah, huge.
I tried all those. And because I was a nighttime soap person, I was a huge Dallas and Dynasty, Falcon Crest, Knots Landing fan. I completely, the genre itself, it's part of our fabric of television. I think that people talk down to it, but it's a hard part. I mean, they have to learn so many lines, and it's a fast pace. It's on every day. It's like,
that's
it's
true.
It is a lot of people, you don't understand. People don't understand that a lot of people you're watching now in movies came from soaps.
That's it. It's
Morgan Freeman, Julianne Moore.
The original launching pad.
Right.
Yep.
It really was. I mean, Julianne Moore played twins, Franny and Sabrina, on As the World Turns. She was the bomb. And when the show was going off the air, she went back.
I know. Very classy.
I was like, that was very classy. And, but the whole thing is soaps are the stepchildren of the industry. And it's like, it needs to not be because they really are part of me. And other countries, you know, telenovelas are huge.
I know. It's a fascinating idea.
Right.
That here, they're just so underappreciated.
And nighttime. Yeah. Every show has a storyline arc now. Empire.
Yeah.
Grey's Anatomy. You know, Law and Order. I mean, it permeates every single thing. Sex and the City, Desperate Housewives. They're all, everything came from soap idea.
Mm-hmm. And they're proven international hits, too.
Right.
It's like Bold and the Beautiful.
And
the Restless. If you go to Italy, there's not a person over there who doesn't watch Bold and the Beautiful. They can't believe. I remember I spoke with someone from Australia, and they couldn't believe how few people actually even know of Bold and the Beautiful.
Right.
Where everyone in Australia, whether they know it, watch it, or whatever, it's on their radar in some capacity.
People understand that 30 million people tuned into Luke and Laura's wedding. 30 million.
Can you imagine now? They can't, I mean,
it's just amazing. Yeah. I mean, just like nighttime shows came and barely get 10 or 12 million a week. Mm-hmm. And those are hits. We were getting 30 million. I was one of those 30 million.
Yeah.
That's how influential. They were on the cover of Time Magazine and Newsweek. I mean, it was like a big, Elizabeth Taylor came on.
Right. I mean, I know that was crazy. They're still not, though, you know, as dead as the media wants you to
believe. No, they tried. They tried it, didn't they? They canceled, four or five soaps in the last, over a 2-year period?
Yeah, I mean, they tried. But it's like, you know, if you look at the ratings for The Young and the Restless, they're pretty competitive.
Yes, they are. Still number one.
To say they've got a shy of 5 million or 4 million people watching in the daytime, this is like live.
11:30.
This is like, people watching CBS live.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, there's definitely power there. And you know what? Online soaps get hits. People are searching. They're still super relevant. The soap opera is not dead, and it drives me crazy.
It
drives me crazy when everyone's like, oh, it's over. It was even on anymore. Didn't that get canceled? And it's like, no, they're still there. You know, and like the thing that gets me the most
is
who work in this business, these are network shows. This isn't some distant cable network, some little, some little guy that's in a couple hundred markets. I mean, these, you can turn on ABC in any waiting room you're in. It'll be there.
Yes.
The show is, they're there and they're relevant.
Yes. Days of Our Lives is just about to celebrate its 50th anniversary in 2 weeks. And we're actually involved. I do Dish and Days, which is a Days of Our Lives after show on AfterBuzz TV. I'm one of the hosts on there. And we're involved in 4 or 5 different events coming up. They haven't had that much press. They're starting to get People Magazine there, People Magazine right this week. But it's NBC's flagship only soap. And it could barely get. So our show, we get the guests on our show because they're like, there's nowhere else to go.
That's awful.
Come on.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah.
I also do the General Hospital show for AfterBuzz called GH Report.
And they really have no publicity.
They don't.
Over there.
They don't.
They really have none.
So I'm getting, I have my first guest coming. He plays Dylan Quartermain. He's coming on in 2 weeks. And so we get the ball rolling because they really have nowhere else to go. I mean, come on, kids. I mean, there's online things here and there and interview things, but there's no television things where they can go to be seen.
Yeah.
Interact with hosts and fans. That's what we provide at AfterBuzz TV. And so I'm really excited to do, I call it our Sunday soap block.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in pre-production for a Young and a Restless show called Restless Wrap Up. So we're thinking about that one. And then Bold and Beautiful is something that's also in the kind of after that. I'd love to have all four shows on AfterBuzz TV on Sundays.
That's fantastic. What else are you doing that you want to promote while you're here?
Yes. Okay, so I have a collaboration with the guys at DeadX Radio in Florida. We're actually doing a pilot for a paranormal series. Mm-hmm. We're going to feature my house in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm going to be the subject of the first one. Mm-hmm. And then I actually joined on as a full-time cast member. So it'll be five guys from Florida. I was like, and then it'll be me from Los Angeles. Must-see television. And we're shopping that around. Can't give away a name yet for that. We're working on that. Also, I have a web series I'm working on right now called The Really Quick James Lott Jr. Show. And right now I'm in the middle of filming it. And basically, it's me showcasing very interesting people in Los Angeles. Doing interesting things. My first one I did is with a beatboxer. Another one I have a magician. Another guy I have an Israeli rapper who sounds like Drake. Pretty crazy. Huh. So I'm going to have really interesting people. And it's going to be really fast and quick, like under, you know, 5-6 minutes. And it's a lot of fun filming it right now. It's a lot of fun doing that. I have my radio show, of course, that you just mentioned, Super Organized Universe Radio. It's on AdrenalineRadio.com. It's my show. I talk about organizing, and I have guests on that all the time from
all
walks
of life. It's a good listen. I recommend checking it out because it's not just tips. It's not dry. It's not, you know, by any means, you know, just like getting your life together. It's really a three-dimensional show where there's a lot, you know, that you learn about James more. I mean, it's like, you know, it's definitely dynamic, and I recommend checking it out because I had it on and I expected to do like the things while I was listening, and I just sat and just listened to the whole show.
I was entertained. That's my point. I didn't want to do an industry show. I didn't want to do like just, oh, well, let's talk about how folding towels. Like, I don't want to do that. It's the radio. You can't see me. Mm-hmm. So I have to really, and we do it live every Friday, and I have to really engage you. And I thought organizing affects everyone from every part of the world in every form of any kind of job or situation you're in. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a homemaker or working in the workforce, it affects you. You could be 15, you could be 7, you could be 75. So my show, I really want to reflect that. Mm-hmm. So please tune me in because we talk about all kinds of stuff on there. We laugh. We're playing Halloween music this whole month. It's the bumpers and we have good stuff. It's just, we have a good time. And it's just, I want everybody to know that we can all do this together. I don't have the secret magic. I mean, I'm not just some like magical unicorn that can, you know, do this. We all can organize,
right,
and sift through our lives. So that show is my baby. I love that show, and that's also based on my blog. Yes, I do write a blog, thesuperorganizer.com. And on that one, I give tips and doing things on that one. I love doing that blog. Love doing that blog. But I'm also working on a podcast for my life coaching arm. Mm-hmm. It's called A Lot of Help. I'll play on my name. Mm-hmm. I just registered all that. So I actually have 15 topics I'm going to talk about for about 20 minutes each. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be coming soon. But I'm very excited. People have been asking me, James, what about some life coaching tips that are not necessarily organizing related?
Yeah.
So I have some really good tips that I'm really excited to bring to everybody. I'm going to record that and release that sometime next year, of course. So
that's great. I mean, there's a lot to look out for coming from James. I have all of his information listed in the information beneath this episode. So be sure to check that out. Absolutely. James, thank you for all the support with this show. Yes. I know you've listened to all the episodes.
I have.
You share it. You recommend it on Twitter, and I appreciate it. You are definitely a friend of the show, and I thank you for that.
Thank you very much. And I have something for you. You guys can't see this, but I'm going to present him a bag or something. And he's to open it up, and he can tell you what it is. So I always feel like it's be fun.
I'm thinking bottle of Smirnoff, kids. Wow. Thank you so much, welcome. James. Yeah, this is exciting and just in time for the Halloween weekend.
That's right.
All right, James, where can we find you online?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at Black Hope LA, and that's BlackHopeLA. Can get the C. I'm on Instagram at L Black Hope, and that's still ELBLAKHOPE. I'm on Facebook under James Lott Jr., that's my fan page. And, of course, I already mentioned those. You can find me at AfterBuzzTV.com. And just look for me. You can just Google my name. It's everywhere.
Well, James, thanks for the supersized episode. I hope everyone learned something. And I hope they took a little nice walk down memory lane. We talked a lot about the soaps and, of course, the Jacksons.
Yes.
And we took a look back.
You know, weird foods. We did it all.
We did a lot.
Huh? This is great. I love it. Thanks for having me.
Of course, James. Thanks for coming in.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grant's_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson. Granted Wish Productions 2015.